Ni Sambula Vinaka, you're listening to Dateline from RNZ Pacific. I'm Koroy Hawkins. Coming up.
And they are all in schools too, in those senses, but they do not know the effects of the drug.
Local production of illegal drugs on the rise in Fiji.
Electricity in the jungles was an issue, so it was conversion of machinery around the mine.
A Bougainville MP wants to reawaken innovation in the autonomous region, and Auckland Transport are working to increase Pacifica representation. Fiji police are warning that illicit drugs, more lethal than methamphetamine, are being produced in the country. This comes after discoveries of clandestine laboratories in the western and eastern divisions. Police say meth is already very dangerous, and the fact that people are producing it in bathtubs is even more so, as Christine Ravoy reports.
Fiji's war on drugs has been going on since the 1980s. But drugs like methamphetamine are now more easily available than ever on the streets of the capital, Suva. A local sex worker who goes by the name Monroe claims she and other prostitutes often take meth.
I've seen younger sex workers come out on the streets. Not only on the streets, it's everywhere else, even undercover sex workers. And they are all in schools too, in those senses, but they do not know the effects of the drug.
For police, a growing concern is that people are now producing illicit drugs locally using very cheap and dangerous ingredients, which they make the end product even more harmful than usual to users' health. In a statement, the head of the police drug unit, Assistant Superintendent Anare Masitambua, says some people use cleaning detergent to extract sulfuric acid to cook meth. Mr. Masitambua says police had also discovered people manufacturing painkillers that could give the same high as meth.
But in other cases, they use the whole chemical, such as rat poison, to cook drugs, which could give a same high as meth, but more damaging. Means to say that people now have the knowledge to make drugs similar to methamphetamine. There's a rapid increase in the usage and seizure of methamphetamine and other synthetics. This shows that methamphetamine is locally manufactured.
The Director of Public Prosecutions, Christopher Pride, says it is estimated that illicit drug activities generate revenue of more than $5 million per annum, and local traffickers can make between $2,500 and $5,000 a day from the sale of cocaine and meth on the domestic market. Last year, police also seized more than 67,000 marijuana plants with a street value of $57 million on the island of Kandavu. And just last month, over 17,000 plants worth around $14.5 million were uprooted on Kandavu. Speaking at a meeting between police and residents on Kandavu, one of the chiefs, Ratukitione Raimbevu, said the issue posed huge challenges to the island's leaders.
For them, it's an issue. It also binds them to come up with a common goal, and that is to take it down to their various traditional units and address the issue. The police department is still working tirelessly with all the teams that come up to the islands to set up in terms of drug eradication. It needs a lot of support and assistance from the communities. It also needs more awareness since it deals with a lot of money.
The Defence Minister, Inia Seruratu, says the illegal drug trade needs to be eradicated as it impacts foreign investor confidence in Fiji.
Fiji has no place for drugs. I know the Commissioner of Police has aligned the Fiji police's focus accordingly on ridding our society of all forms of illicit drugs.
While the harmful effects of hard drugs like meth are still unknown to many in Fiji, psychiatrist Selina Kuruletha says people need to realise that these hard drugs are highly addictive and harmful to their health.
Their number one priority is staying on that high for as long as they can. So keeping a job 8 to 5 is near impossible. Carrying on normal conversations is almost impossible because they're thinking about how am I going to get my next fix.
The government has recommended that people take up cash crop farming to address the problem of marijuana cultivation. Meanwhile, a magistrate has warned 5 police officers accused of planting drugs in a vehicle against interfering with state witnesses while they are on bail. The 5 officers appeared in a Suva court under heavy police presence on Tuesday. The group is charged with 1 count of conspiracy to defeat justice, while 2 of them face an additional charge of 1 count of abuse of office. The case has been adjourned to April the 23rd. Naya Dhangu, Christine Ravoy.
Bougainvillians have a reputation for innovation. This came to the fore during the region's horrific civil war with the Papua New Guinea government, forcing the rebels to be more resourceful in the jungle. Now, as Bougainville strives to develop its economy, there is a push to reawaken this inventiveness. Don Wiseman has been speaking with people in Bougainville and joins me now. Kia ora, Don.
Yeah, hi, Karoy. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And so, what is this innovation?
Well, it's been something that's been part of the Bougainvillean psyche for a fair while. And, of course, I think we've got an idea that it came to the fore during the Civil War. I was speaking with Emmanuel Carlos Kaitavara. He's a new MP in Bougainville. He thinks this inventiveness is still there, but he says it's going to take a lot of help from aid donors to reawaken it. He gave me an idea of some of the more dramatic things that were done during the conflict.
They needed electrical equipment to build weapons. So electricity in the jungles was an issue. So it was conversion of machinery around the mine, from machines, bulldozers, the trucks, and even old generators converted to hydroelectric power in order to generate power to use equipment to basically build shotguns and the like.
That's what happened to all those old buildings in Arawa.
Yes, the majority of the machines around Panguna were cannibalized.
The innovation in Bougainville was always something that was always almost like folk tales back in Solomon Islands, or hearing about all the stuff going on in the Civil War there. And they're even making fuel for their trucks, their own fuel.
Yes, well, they used coconut to make ethanol, and that was to help start the motor vehicles. But Emmanuel Carlos Kaitavara says a peculiar side effect of this is that people now have plenty of knowledge on how to make home brew. And home brew has become one of the more insidious social evils on Bougainville. He said to reignite this resourcefulness, they will need donor help. He says it can't be as it was after the war ended and foreign players returned, bringing in products from overseas, ignoring the opportunities and ideas that already existed locally.
I think what happened is when the services came back, fuel got reintroduced, we got generators, services came back, shops started selling generators, all these kind of things came back. And I guess it was easier for the population to basically use products that were already in the market.
It's odd in a sense that this creativity would completely disappear.
Well, it hasn't completely. Emmanuel Carlos Kaitavara gave me the example of the alluvial miners in Panguna, people who work through the tailings from the shut-down mine there. Alluvial mining is illegal, but it has been tolerated by the government.
They've gone ahead, they've developed small ball mills, basically, you could say, really roughly designed to process and crush material. So these are things that have happened. We've got expatriates who've come from outside who've taken photos of these designs. And in fact, they've gone ahead and they've developed these designs, you know, outside of Bougainville.
And all of this is in the backdrop of their own discussions, Bougainville's own discussions about self-determination, isn't it?
Well, it is. They are striving to build a new nation. They voted overwhelmingly 16 months ago for independence from Papua New Guinea, and that process has still got to be negotiated with the PNG government. But the expectation is, very strongly across Bougainville, that they will become independent. Emmanuel Carlos Kaitavara says this emphasis on innovation is going to help people believe in themselves. He said it also helped the government to target that lost generation. This is the generation that largely missed out on education because of the conflict.
Leanne Hall, Don, that was RNZ Pacific senior reporter Don Wiseman. Auckland Transport has launched a Pacifica strategy aimed at lifting up, empowering and growing their Pacifica workforce. Auckland is the largest Polynesian city in the world, and executives want that better reflected in the organisation. Currently, two-thirds of Pacifica employees work in customer experience and service delivery roles, but as Sailor Jane Hopgood reports, they are underrepresented in other key functions such as risk and assurance, planning and investment and safety.
Auckland Transport Chief Executive Officer Shane Ellison believes AT's Pacifica strategy is an enabler in helping the organisation create an inclusive culture where people feel valued and supported regardless of differences. Mr. Ellison states that if they get this right, they'll be better off when it comes to supporting Tāmaki Makaurau, Auckland. In 2018, a Pasifika network was formed within Auckland Transport and discussions began on the strategy. Head of Pasifika Network, Lynette Reid, says that means being involved in the community, understanding Pasifika needs and translating their commitment to them.
It's in order for us to be able to serve our community from Pasifika perspective, we need to be, I guess, culturally relevant, culturally intelligent, and understand culturally how we're able to serve appropriately what the needs are.
The Auckland Pasifika population is currently at 15.5%, yet only 6% of employees at Auckland Transport are Pasifika. Head of Organisational Effectiveness, Anthony Hoare, says he would like to see that number double.
One thing about this strategy is we've got some reasonably overt targets and goals that we'd like to go after, and we'd like to think that within the next 2 years we can at least double that.
Ms. Reid says all 140 Pasifika individuals in the network played a part in shaping the strategy.
This strategy has been from the Pasifika network, so it's really the voice of the people, but it also means there's great ownership to be able to take everyone else on the journey with us. You know, it just gets rid of the assumption, get rid of some of the preconceived stereotypes as well, so really just smashes some of those things.
Some of the targets AT want to reach by 2023 is double the number of Pasifika hires into the company, as well as Pasifika in leadership roles. It also wants a minimum of 75% of their people leaders attend the Kakala leadership workshop. Kakala is a type of flower, and in most Pacific cultures, they gift flower garlands or leis on special occasions as a sign of love and respect. Ms. Reid says the Kakala leadership model is about how employees conduct themselves in their jobs. An example is the weaving of the flowers to create the garland and what it will symbolise in a work environment.
You've got this whole weaving process of the flowers through the garland, and that means that you're weaving the goals, weaving the person's ambitions and what their skill set, what they'd like to develop, what their career looks like, pathways, weaving that into the organisation, making it really relevant for them.
Mr. Hall says that very model will be integrated into the whole organisation.
I think it's as much about sharing the Pasifika culture as it is also the rest of the organisation learning about the Pasifika culture as well, and some of those elements that add value to people's day-to-day jobs. And I think the Kakala model is a really good example of that. Like, that will become an integral part of our leadership development program.
Auckland Transport Pasifika strategy also values and respects Māori as tangata whenua or Aotearoa under the Treaty of Waitangi. This is Sarah Jane Hopgood.
And that's Dateline from RNZ Pacific. There's more online, rnzi.com, and you can listen to this program as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Tōwhā.